This podcast is brought to you by PrideNZ.com and made possible through a generous grant from Aratayohi.
I'm here in Kiran's flat with Kiran's flatmates. Tell us a bit about your flat.
We're a little flat in Avondale. I tend to refer to it publicly as a safe house because that's what I set up for it to be, and myself and my partner rent out the house to a bunch of other largely disabled, largely trans, queer people. And sometimes we're full to capacity, so some of us are actually looking at somehow obtaining a second house on the street so that we can, you know, put up more people because there's a real need for safe accommodation for people like us.
What are some of the issues around safe accommodation that people are needing?
A big part is the housing crisis in Auckland right now. So that's massive. I mean, like, queer and trans youth already have like a really, really hard time finding safe housing, right? And when you've got a housing crisis, that just amplifies that issue, like, you know, tenfold, essentially. It's very, very difficult to find flatmates that you will be safe with. It's very difficult to find a house to begin with. So
when 100 people turn up for a flat viewing, they're not going to pick the ragtag quiz.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
They're not going to pick the ragtag quiz.
Four of us were flat hunting for a significant amount of time, and it was difficult enough finding people who were remotely willing to accept people who were students. And even though not all of us were students, at least one of us was working, people were still like, no, you're too young, or you're students. And if I showed up for flat viewings alone as a visibly queer brown person, they literally would not trust that I had the authority to speak on behalf of my potential flatmates. If I showed up with one of the others, well, or, you know, also really visibly queer looking, they'd just be like, okay, no, this is going to be a house of degenerates. We can't rent to you. And as a result, several of us were, you know, like, didn't have a place to live for a very long time.
So what else does your flat get up to apart from safe housing? Is there, you know, activities? Oh, yeah, so we're looking at something on the wall with a variety of
the flat's main drinking game rules.
Got it. So safe housing and drinking.
Well, it's, you know, like, that's part of it, I guess. Like, part of safe housing stuff is that so many of us have, you know, PTSD or other trauma stuff going on, and I'm not going to say that drinking games are specifically a trauma coping mechanism, but also I'm going to say that they kind of are. And in general, like, safe spaces, even spaces that are explicitly meant to be safe for queer and trans people, don't often accommodate survivors particularly well, especially not people who are, you know, most of us are autistic or have some other sort of sensory shit going on or some sort of anxiety shit. And, like, am I supposed to be swearing this much?
And I think it's all right.
Okay. And it's really difficult to find you know, even straight white allies who are comfortable with that sort of stuff, because it's like, man, you guys are weird enough with your, you know, like, same-sex relationships.
What does that even mean?
I don't know what that means.
So you've all touched on some things that sounds like it's not really covered by, you know, for want of a better term, mainstream gay rights activism or campaigning or whatever,
right.
Some of that being housing issues, safer spaces and safer housing for queer and trans young people, as well as like mental health stuff and survivor stuff. Is there, why do you, well, I mean, it's kind of obvious why it's not covered, but what are some, you know, reasons or tensions about mainstream gay rights stuff not covering all this?
It's too much work and they don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's literally it. Like, I mean, they've got theirs. Why do they bother with people like us? Like, I mean, primarily, like, any sort of movement towards acceptance, towards inclusion is about saying, hey, we want to be equal to our oppressors. We want to have that power too.
Yeah.
And they have that power. They have that power over queers like us. They have that power in the sense that, you know, they can still very much exclude us from spaces which have stepped up, in which, you know, they are equal to each other. It's like, congrats, you know? You have the right to form nuclear families recognized by the state as marriage. like, if you fit into that model, and if you have enough money to pay for a wedding, and if you have, you know, like, how many of us are ever going to?
Yeah, at some point, like, everything gets simplified, like, all of the stuff gets simplified to capital, and that includes, like, cultural capital, social capital, like, financial resources, everything. And if you're, like your only access of oppression is that you're gay or whatever, it's, like, you're going to side with capital, you're going to do whatever you can, and part of having that means screwing over the people below you. That's how it works.
Because you benefit from so much of it. Like, I think part of the reason why white gay men tend to be so outraged by being mistreated and by homophobic violence and stuff like that is because by all rights, they should have access to what white straight men do. By all rights, they should be able to, you know, tread all over women and tread all over other minorities. But they, but you know, on some axes, you know, hey, they're actually getting bullied, right? And oh my God. Oh my God, that's unacceptable. Why don't we have everything that we should have coming to us? And nothing else matters because, you know, you still have that power. You still get to call other people, you know, politically correct. You get to call people, like, social justice warriors because, you know, I'm just a regular old gay who lives in Ponsonby and, you know, like, all I want to do is enter landscaping competitions and, you know, go walk all 7 dogs with my husband.
And be perfectly respectful and palatable to all the other heterosexuals in Ponsonby.
Yep.
Yeah.
So would you say that there's definitely some tensions with how, I don't know, for want of a better terms, the stuff that isn't covered by mainstream gay media, and then how that is represented when it is covered by mainstream media.
They stand to lose things from covering it, so they don't.
Yeah.
People won't read them if they talk about us because we're not happy stories.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, yeah. Literally the Pride Parade.
Oh, boy.
This is earlier than I expected to get into this. Oh, yeah, for context, also, our flat is basically full of activists, but that's mostly because, you know, if we stop yelling about our lives, literally no one will give us anything we can survive
on.
It's yellow dye. Yeah, it's yellow dye, and they're constantly telling us to shut up.
How has that been received? Has anybody picked up on that, or has it just been largely ignored?
It's been picked up in the most curious of ways, in that, like, for example, I got interviewed for an American, like, rainbow website, and, and like, nobody in New Zealand actually wants to talk to me.
Except for, like, the media who wants to, like, criticise us as much as they possibly can.
And, like, I mean, Jen literally just got mentioned by family first. So,
Does anyone do a little background on what's just happened with family first?
StatsNZ just released the new standard for noting gender identity, which had some problems in that it lists, like, anything that isn't, like, cis male or cis female in, like, an other section. So I wrote a post about that, and Family First have just wrote, like, an article saying that it's a really confusing standard and it should just be set to, like, objective reality, which is male and female, and that even people like me, like, gender activists, are never going to be happy with it because we're criticising it as well.
I want to be a gender activist. It sounds like a fun thing.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not that hard to get it right, but they don't really stand anything to gain. It's like, it's seen as a waste of resources to accommodate trans people. Like, and it's sad, like, we're literally in the LGBT, we're in the most famous acronym for it, and we're still not, like, it's still seen as, like, a bonus if we're even, like, treated even slightly correct. Like, this is seen, like, having an other section is seen as a step forward.
Right, yeah, and I mean, we had, like, there was a long, long public discussion, like, StatsNZ attempted to engage us, and there were a lot of us putting time and effort into that, and we were getting yelled over by people who were like, excuse me, okay, no one my age has heard the word cisgender, like, I'm sorry, but we're all just straight, like, the word is straight.
20 people, and only one of them knew what it was, and another one looked it up in the dictionary and said it meant being on the side of a mountain.
Comment. Yeah, a forum about gender identity. It's like, okay, you obviously know jack all, right? And you think your opinion matters, and in fact you feel entitled to your opinion mattering as much as, if not more than us, because you represent the majority, and the people who might be confused by the census matter more than the people who are absolutely outright being, you know, thrown on the side of the road.
The thing that annoys me is that they have like 12 pages of explanation of what all the words mean and what to tick for what at the start of the census, so confusion isn't a valid reason for not including it.
Yeah.
What would you say some of the, I don't know, the impacts of, I guess, essentially being, you know, tacked on in the end or marginalised within a wider LGBT movement? You know, how does that impact, like, materially or in reality kind of thing?
I mean, like, basically, as far as, like, the like mainstream gay movement is concerned right now, if we're not like pile driving our way towards marriage equality, then it's not worth it.
That's like, the whole thing with the states with all of the money. Like as soon as marriage equality like went through in the Supreme Courts, all of the money is starting to dry up from all of the queer organizations, and no one's going to be able to use that for trans things or anything else.
We've got marriage. Like what now? Like obviously the gays are equal. You know, like there's no homeless trans youth. There's no, you know, like queer people of color being assaulted on the streets. You know, like equality. Ooh, rainbow cake toppers.
And not to mention like even what marriage means to different people as well. Like marriage isn't necessarily an accessible institution for a lot of people, right? It's marriage is for those like people who already have access to capital, who already have access to power, essentially for white middle class gays. And everybody else just gets trampled or tossed to the side.
Yeah, it's not like marriage is not really a coherent thing for anyone in this house. Like
Excuse me,
our resident bougies.
But your marriage is not going to be it's bougie
gonna cost
and middle class.
$36,000.
Yeah.
Which is the average for a wedding, apparently, which, you know, holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have never had, like, holy shit, like, I'm the person who pays the rent and, like, mostly, you know, like, sorts out it. Expenses and stuff, and I cover any shortfalls anyone else has, and I don't know what I would do with $36,000. Like, that's a lot of money.
That's a surgery that you have to wait 40 years to get.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my god. And you know, Jen's been fundraising and shit, but like, you know, like, but there are people out there who can just blow all of that and be like, you know, I want my dream wedding and I'm going to have it. And how is that reality anything to do with us? It's like, you know, the only thing stopping me from having my wedding, you know, is not the $36,000. It's the fact that, you know, the state hasn't made it legal for me to have an excuse to throw this massive party where I get to wear white.
Yeah, I just want to say, like for context, my benefit just went up from 140 to 215 per week, and I got very, 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 very excited. Yeah. So that's the difference that you're looking at here.
Yeah.
And it's still just barely enough to keep me, like, alive and fed.
I reckon if, like, some white cis gays, like, ran, like, a Kickstarter for their wedding, they'd get money so much farther than any trans woman would.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Totally.
And, like, that should be a bad indicator, not a good one, which is how they'd take it.
Yeah. People want to hear happy stories. That's the love wins narrative.
Yeah. We don't. I mean, like, it's lazy. It's, you know, we want to tell people it gets better, because if we tell them, you know, I'm sorry, the system is fucked and against you, then we actually have to change things. We actually have to make something that's not empty promises for our youth. And that's all any of us have ever gotten is empty promises, you know. We're sitting here and we've been, like, we've been multiply marginalized, and no one is accommodating any of our needs, and the only people we have is each other, and we've been so fucked up by society and by the different ways we've been treated that we can't even trust each other properly. Mm. And we're terrified of each other, and we're all we have. You know, and you can't give us an it gets better story. We're not going to believe that, and because we aren't willing to take part in this happy feel-good making, you know, because we're not going to smile and walk in the parade and be like, hey, you know what, life is good for me because Auckland has a parade, because rainbows are allowed, because I'm wearing this, you know, rainbow patch on my jacket and it means that people slap me on the back and congratulate me instead of yelling slurs at me in the street. A guy spat on me after the parade in 2014. I was sitting on the side of the road and he spat at me. And a whole bunch... And
I got slurs yelled at me in this parade.
People yell at us even when we do walk in the parade, and we say, hey, you know, maybe I'll try to celebrate with you for this one goddamn day, and maybe you'll have my back for one other goddamn day this year when I ask you to feed me. And they don't.
A lot of the time, like, the best way that we like because we do get a lot of donuts and stuff, like, to like food and money on occasion, and we're very grateful, but like a lot of the time we sell it by, like, framing it around, like, hey, help these queer kids, look, marriage equality just got up.
Yeah, like, I raised the most money I've ever raised for this flat. Like, I got us groceries for a month by saying, hey, marriage equality just passed, to celebrate, you can help us get food. And it's like, none of us actually give a shit about marriage equality. Oh my god, if anything, and we want to stop hearing about it, because all these, like, people who think they're good allies, who have literally yelled slurs at us, or refused to support us, or misgendered us, suddenly have rainbow filters on their Facebook profile page. And you know what?
I've got impact of connections down here as a note, but I can't remember what.
With the media?
When you're living the life where you have to, like, scream and yell for every, like, little bit that you can get your relationship with, like, the people in the community obviously is going to deteriorate to the point where you can't really feel like you can go to those organizations for help. Like, when, like, the people who are, like, in them and running them, people you have, like, fought with online over, like, issues of, like, your rights and your safety, then you can't feel like the community is a safe space for you.
Right, yeah, because, yeah. I mean, like, our friend Emmy has talked about this repeatedly, and, like, the fact that, you know, she's been constantly going on and on about how, you know, there's massive, massive injustice in the prison industrial system, especially for trans women of colour, and no one has listened to her, no one cares. Yeah. And, like, what are we supposed to do? No one wants to hear our stories because they're unfair, and also, quite frankly, they can't be bothered. It's not happening to anyone who remotely they can remotely relate to. So why does it matter? You know, we look funny, we act funny, we talk funny, our priorities are different, and because most of us are really fucking autistic, you know, like, we aren't human, basically. We can't connect with them. We don't have this emotional capacity to engage with the world because we are so mistreated that, you know, we kind of have to shut down to keep ourselves safe.
I mean, even the Department of Corrections ignored, like, 3 different Official Information Act requests about, like, the state of, like, trans prisoners and how many there were and, like, where they were. And they just, like, ignored them because they know that there's no big, like, media uprising or, like, backlash. It's not going to be a big public story. It's just, like, maybe a footnote on, like, GNZ or something, but definitely not, like, 1 or 3 or anything. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I mean, like, we were at... I and some of the others here were at an event hosted at the university talking about, like, Māori and Pacifica queer stories, and a representative of one of the major gay media organisations was there and just said, you know, I don't get it, if, like, to Emmy again, you know, I don't get it if y'all are you know, so lacking in resources. Like, I was talking to the dude at the time because he was just asking why don't we reach out, why don't we ask for help, and I was saying, you know, we do, and there is nothing set up to help us because no one knows that we exist, and when they know we exist, they don't really want to help us.
It's like a too hard basket.
Yeah, and he went, I don't get it. Like, I mean, surely, you know, the mainstream gay community will be willing to help you, like, just because, like, other things aren't set up already, why don't you just apply for, like, the Gay Men's Help Network? And it's like, because like the answer is because I'm not a gay man. Yeah, I'm not a gay man.
As a gay man.
No one is a gay man. Are we supposed to pretend to be something we're not? Are we supposed to pretend to be something that we've been coercively, like, in the case of trans women, you know, and I'm not speaking as a we here, like, to be clear, I'm not a trans woman, but, like, are we supposed to pretend to be things we're not in order to get help? Like, is that to consider reasonable?
Mm-hmm. We were, like, trying when, pretending to be things that we weren't to get housing.
Yeah, and I think it's also, like, it's very important, like, most, like, even the things that are set up to help us don't really acknowledge, like, any reality except that we are trans. Like, off this house, like, everyone here has, like, everyone except one in this house is autistic. There's, like, PTSD, there's, like, we're very, like, mentally ill.
I have two diagnoses.
It's a really, really, really big part of being trans, is just, like, trauma making us mentally ill.
And that's because of the way that the mainstream is treating us. It's like, you know, like, we can't, like, you know, maybe the born this way woo-woo rhetoric doesn't work for those of us who are made this way by the way you fucking treated us.
Yeah.
And we can't get back who we were.
And, like, it makes it even harder to ask for help because we're too weird. We act too weird. We need too much space to ourselves. We're not emotive enough in our speaking. We can't speak formally. We don't understand how to control our tone. Like,
we ask for help, but we sound like we don't deserve it.
Yeah.
We're, like, inconvenient. That's what it boils down to.
Yeah. We're not respectable enough. We need to, we're too much of, we take up too much space if we even try a little bit of space.
There's the deserving poor and there's the undeserving poor, and unfortunately, weird queer trans kids fit into the latter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you've named, like, a multitude of essentially structural and social oppressions and intersections, and you live on the kind of intersections of a whole bunch of things. What are some of the ways in which you, I don't know, I guess, resist or survive? Like, what are the things that you... some of you doing personally or collectively? I mean, this house definitely sounds like it's an important part of that.
Yeah, I mean, I've said this before, but really all we have is each other a lot of the time. And, like, And that's really true to like a really, really big extent and a very scary extent, because it's like, even if we find other people who share the same things we do, you know, who are disabled in the same way we are, who are queer and trans in the same way we are, like, we don't know if they're in with people who aren't, who are, who benefit from power and who might, you know, whose involvement with the people we know might lead to ramifications for us. The queer community is complex as hell, and too many people, you know, aren't aware that, you know, they're hanging out with literal rapists, or they're hanging out with people who are white supremacists, or, you know, and like, it's like, I can't go to most queer events, even ones that are, you know, explicitly trans-focused or explicitly, you know, meant for, you know, literally Asian queers or whatever, without running into someone who has abused one of my friends.
Yeah. There's, like, even in a big-ass, like, city like Auckland, like, it's very, very hard. Like, everyone knows everyone in the queer community. You're 1 or 2 degrees away. Like, even here, like, all of us are 1 or 2 degrees of separation from abusers and rapists, and yeah, like, so we end up seeming really, really insular because we can only trust like maybe 8 people in this community. Yeah.
Would you say that the space that you've created here is, I don't know, I guess like a hub so that other people can find each other?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, we have people who travel through who are from other parts of the country, and in December from other countries, who come through and stop and stay with us for a little bit and, like, you know, check in, work, like, have a little breathing space here. We have people who know me on Tumblr, where I run and used to run much more actively a blog for gender questioning teenagers. Like, and, you know, people who are like, hey, you know, I live in Auckland too. I really need a space where I'm not going to get misgendered. Can I come hang for a day? Can I come sleep over tonight? Hi, you know, I don't know where I'm going to sleep tonight. Can I come sleep at your place? And it's like, sure, we have a spare bed wedged in our room. You can come sleep with us.
Yeah. There are 5 people living in bedrooms here, and most nights there's at least 7 people here, if not like 10.
Yeah. I think our record was 12, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes we have 12 people here. It's a 4-bedroom house with 1 toilet.
Yeah, and like not very much hot water.
And we have a shower that doesn't work.
The shower doesn't work. Like, we have a fun time literally trying to get anything done. The shower doesn't work, like half the stove doesn't work, but like we get by.
Mm.
We get by, and like we have to get by because, like, what can we do but help other people out? It's like, okay, look, there are currently 8 people in the house. Someone else doesn't have somewhere to sleep tonight. Of course they can sleep on our floor.
Yeah,
find another bed.
We'll do and it. Like, it's, yeah. And Alia said already, like, it's really important to note that, you know, we're all like, we all need a lot of space to ourselves, but we all do what we can when other people need space because, you know, we only have what we have, and something is better than nothing, and sometimes we have to make compromises.
Yeah,
hopefully we can fix that with a second house, though.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Me and my partner here. Are you okay with being named?
No.
Yeah. No.
Okay. We sleep in the lounge together. We don't have a room because it's a 4-bedroom house and Key's with their partner. And, I'm fine with that, but, like, having a second house because I'm very autistic and often get very overstimulated because this is a common
Everyone's
space.
Everyone's constantly tracking through the space where you sleep.
Yeah. And having a second house means, like, we not only can help more people, like,
but
with
we're
same issues.
Better equipped to help people because, like, basically all of us are heavily involved with activism or some sort, with reaching out to support, you know, some sector. We all have different, we play different roles, we have different interests, we reach out to different groups, but we aren't going to be able to do that if we're constantly burnt out from, you know, trying to look after ourselves, but sometimes that's the best we can manage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What are some of the relationships like with the other groups and other people that you've reached out with?
It depends on what other groups.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of stayed here has turned out shit.
Yeah.
A lot of people tend to regard us with a sort of wariness. Like, they don't trust us. They think we've got something up our sleeves. They think we've got something planned that is some sort of, you know, hostile takeover or something that's bigger than just, you know, surviving.
I think because, like, they don't believe or understand about, like, all of the struggle. They think that you just have all of this time on your hands to, like, do all this bad shit, when in reality you're just trying to live.
Yeah, really.
And, like, they're like, what are they doing with all of that time? Why do they need all that time to, like, cook and clean?
Yeah, we're all disabled in some way, and, like, even, like, doing the dishes or, like, vacuuming, like, will take up an entire day. if only because, like, it takes up all our energy, and then all we can do from then on is rest. Like, a lot of our time is spent not doing anything, because that's all we can do.
And, I mean, as activists, like, that makes us, you know, between juggling, you know, the literal perfunctory tasks of staying alive and juggling what everyone else expects of us in terms of, you know, just literally just keeping ourselves alive, we have to do all this activism. And then people want to talk to us, the media wants to contact us, and we have to deal with all this press fallout and all this public fallout from people talking about us and people trying to talk to us when we barely have enough energy to talk to each other to make sure we have milk in the fucking house.
Yeah.
I bought milk.
So what are, it sounds like, well, obviously, you know, there's a whole bunch of negative crap surrounding lots of different aspects of your identities, you know, around mental health and around just a whole bunch of stuff, really. What are some of the ways, you know, how have you personally worked through all that crap, essentially?
Get drunk and watch Glee. Glee is good because, like, it's the mainstream gay show. So, like, we can watch it and, like, see what these people are really like and laugh at them.
Yeah, it's like, hey, you know, this is all really familiar to us, but it has no ramifications on us because none of these people are going to jump out of the screen and actually, you know, beat us up.
Yeah, we've made a habit of just, like, semi-ironically watching, like, Glee and other, like, bad shows and just, like, relating to them really hard while also, like understanding and, like, making fun of all this shit. Because these shows are really, really racist a lot of the time.
It's, like, the only safe way to relate to the mainstream gay thing is through, like, through the TV laughing at them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's not even, like, good laughter, it's anxious laughter. It's, oh my god, these relationships are so unhealthy and remind me of relationships I've been in the past when I thought I was cis. Yeah. Or whatever, you know? Mm-hmm. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Oh my god, this is so painful to watch. It's surreal.
Yeah.
And
the thing is, it's meant to be playful laughs. It's meant to be genuinely heartwarming.
But it's our lives.
It's our lives. This is literally our lives, you know? Like, people look at it and go, oh my god, there's, like, drama every single episode, and, like, new people are trying to destroy this group of people every single episode. It's like, wow!
Like, a lot of, like, this is more of just, like, people not believing that we exist or that we struggle this much. Like reviews and stuff, this is the thing. Like, any kind of music or TV shows or anything about trans people, queer people, like, will always be, like, it's not relatable. Like, no one actually has this many struggles, like, and yes, yeah, we do. Like, yeah.
The cis dude who reviewed Transgender Dysphoria Blues and said, oh, this album is not relatable. It wasn't written for you, oh my fucking god!
Yeah.
It's not punk because it's not relatable.
When I was still living at home, my dad stopped watching Orange is the New Black because he found it unrealistic, because he thought, there's no way prisons can be this bad. And by all accounts, prisons are so much worse. Yeah.
Yeah, and one of our friends had a relative share a Facebook meme about, like, how we should totally have old people put in prisons and prisoners put in senior care centers, because prisons totally look after people way better than senior care centers. And I'm like, what?
Why does anyone have to be in prison? Abolish it.
That, and also, you are totally white, middle class, and, like, you have never thought about a prison for a day in your life other than as taxpayer money being wasted.
Yeah. Not
just being wasted, but, like, being wasted on what they see as, like, a luxury for prisoners. Things like hot showers and, like, power and food. Yeah.
And
free accommodation.
Yeah. It's your, like, fault if you put your grandma in a shitty place. Like, let's be real, it's your fault.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, we want, like, really, like, whites just need to shut the fuck up about blaming us for their problems, because honestly, like, if you can't be bothered, if you're so individualist and capitalist that you can't be bothered looking after your grandparents, or, like, you don't have the facility to look after your grandparents or whatever the hell, like, that's and existing structures don't do that without kind of exploiting you or your relatives, that's not on the people who are going to jail. How is it on the people who are going to jail? How is it on the people who, you know, have different sort of family ethos than you or whatever the hell, like.
If it was really that much better, old people would just commit crimes and go to jail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, old people aren't dumb. They'd go to jail if it was better.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, like, it's very YOLO, you know? Like, why not just fucking go to jail?
Yeah.
If we all go to jail, then they'll overflow and they'll have to get rid of jails. This is how we abolish the prison industrial complex.
This is the big thing that we've been planning with all the spare time.
Yeah, we just all gotta go to jail.
Well, just to wrap up, are there any kind of last things that you want to say? Like, to whoever's potentially listening, or to other people who might be struggling and surviving in the same way that you all are?
If you have money, give us it. If you don't, come hang out with us.
That's pretty much it. You know, like, you're not alone. You're not alone, and the world is more shit and more terrifying than you have possibly imagined, even if you're already depressed, I promise you. But you're not alone, and I'm not going to tell you that it gets better, but you'll find some way. Something will happen.
Yeah.
You'll run into a bunch of ragtag queers like we are, and we will terrify people at the bus stop waiting for the bus. And
it doesn't get better, but you find other people for whom it also does not get better.
Yeah. And you get to be miserable together.
Yay!
Better than nothing. Don't sound so unenthusiastic. I'm happy for having found it all.
I sounded enthusiastic.